Hi, I'm Danae King. I'm the Faith and Values and Immigration Reporter here at the Columbus Dispatch, and I'm sitting here today with Ruben Castilla Herrera, organizer with the Columbus Sanctuary Collective, an immigrants' right group that was formed after Edith Espinal went into sanctuary at the Columbus Mennonite Church in October. So, Ruben, I had you here today because this morning you guys did a press conference for the second immigrant entering sanctuary, Miriam Vargas, and I wanted you to talk to us a little bit about the movement locally and how it kind of compares to the national movement and a little bit about what you guys are doing. So, first of all, tell me a little bit about, just explain, you know, what sanctuary is and what it means.
Right. Well, sanctuary is basically a last option for immigrants who've done everything they can to stay here legally. And they have no other option. They want to stay with their family. Usually they have families, and usually their mothers, interestingly enough. And so the cases that we have in Ohio are all women except for one male. And so they've exhausted all of the options in order to stay here. We don't necessarily vet them, but probably most cases is that they have no criminal record. They've done everything they're supposed to do, and it just, the system does not work for them. And actually, they also have an order of deportation, so they already have to leave a date. And so rather than be deported and separated, they look into the option of sanctuary. It's not immigration reform. It's not the answer, but it is a answer. It's a starfish story where you're making a difference to one person and one family.
So sanctuary is where an undocumented immigrant who's been here for, you know, a certain amount of time, like I know Miriam's been here since 2005. She came from Honduras and had two American citizen children here, and they're 5 and 9. And so her story's most kind of familiar to me because she entered sanctuary on Tuesday, June 26th, after ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ordered her to leave the country and go back. So she was supposed to fly out the morning after she entered sanctuary.
Wednesday morning, she had a 7 o'clock flight. She had to be at the airport, Columbus Airport, at 4:30.
Wow. Okay. So she came in the night before, and she's living there with her family in a room of the church. So tell me why it's churches. You know, why can people not be kind of taken by ICE out of a church?
Well, first of all, they can be. And we don't know. We don't know that this happened recently. But internal policy that ICE has, and it happened during the Obama administration, is that they designated what they call sensitive locations, four sensitive locations. One is a church. The other is hospitals. The other is schools at all levels, private, public, from in kindergarten to college. And the last, interestingly enough, is our rallies. So they can't, for example, the rally we had there, if there's undocumented, they will not go in there. The problem with that, or the challenge, is that they can be waiting for you down the street, across the street. And we know that that's happened with schools. And in fact, we were concerned because we do know that they have gone into hospitals in the state of Texas. And so they have not gone into a church. It's a lot different to go into a church than it is going to a hospital. So they're sensitive locations, and they have said that they will not go in, even during this administration.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about the cases kind of nationwide. I know that Edith Espinal, who went in October locally, and Miriam, who went in this month, they're 2 of 44 cases nationwide,
right.
And they're 2 of 5 public cases in Ohio.
Right.
So the only state that has more is North Carolina. Mm-hmm. So why does Ohio have so many?
I think that possibly because Edith was the first public case in the state, and it's very public, very high profile. Our strategy is to get the public to know about her and to put the story as much as we can, the real story, her struggle and her fight. And that does, interesting thing, what it does is protect her, actually, because it grows the movement, it grows the support, it grows the faith community and other communities. And so her publicity and her being out there protects her as far as her stay. The challenge with that, it also makes her a target as well for people who don't want her here. But interesting enough is, at least in Columbus, we're in an area where we haven't seen that it's that. We haven't seen kind of the haters come out too much. Although we know that, you know, you read comments and stories on reports. We see that. I don't really look at that too much, but I'm aware of them. And so our strategy is to make it public and not private. And then also that the sanctuary, we call them sanctuary leaders, actually leads their case. You know, we're not there to do it for them. They have to learn how to do it themselves and speak for themselves. And so that's why today's event, where Miriam was the speaker, and I was new to her. She was scared. She didn't know what to expect. She's never done that before. And she was brave enough to stand up, however brief, and say, I'm here to be with my children. That's the story, not separating families.
Yeah, so, you know, the collective is instrumental is what I'm hearing, but so are Edith and Miriam. Right. So let's hear a clip from you this morning from the press conference when you talk kind of about their relationship.
Is that this movement is led by the people that are impacted.
That's right.
And we have to listen to that voice, because this case becomes the second sanctuary, person in sanctuary. And as I said, because it's a movement of the people, the first contact that Miriam had was actually with Edith. And Edith spoke to her and about her experience. And the decision of entering sanctuary is not easy. But Edith has played a big part of this process as well. The challenge is she cannot be here. And so our point is to have these immigrants in sanctuary, these people in sanctuary, to be able to return home. As soon as they get in, then our goal is to get them back.
Right, so that kind of explains a little bit about Edith and Miriam working together. Because I know Miriam was telling me that on Friday that she went to Edith when she was considering going into sanctuary. And Edith was very, you know, blunt with her. She said, "You're stuck here. You know, this is, you can't leave. It's hard, but you also get to be with your family." And that's kind of the crux of this, it seems, that they're scared to go back to countries where they've been threatened with violence, but they also want to stay with their family. So let's hear this clip from Miriam where she talks this morning about, she talks to Trump about, you know, what it means to her to have her family.
Solamente le quiero dar un mensaje al presidente. Que se pongan cada la mano en la conciencia y que piensen su familia si a él lo separaran, como se sintiera. Y que fuera perseguido por ningún delito alguno que ha hecho.
So I have a message for President Trump. I would like to ask him to put his hand upon his heart and his and raise his consciousness and think of his children and what would he do for his children. And if there's even just a small thing that he has not done right or done lawful, how would we work with him to acknowledge his humanity as well?
Okay, so tell me kind of off of that about the Trump aspect of this, the political activism aspect of sanctuary.
That was a powerful statement that she made. And what she's doing is what anti-Trump people are not doing. She's reaching into Trump, the human being. Now, who's asking that, right? Ultimately, that's what's going to save us all when we see each other's humanity, even those that are hurting us. And so for her to be in sanctuary, want to be to actually say that, it even speaks to me, because I feel like I'm not even doing that, right? And so that's so powerful to hear her say that. And so I think that that's really at the crux of what she's saying. But also, we also know that Trump is for my, now this is me speaking, is Trump is not someone that is, that really cares, and he's using people politically and for his own purpose. We don't even know, right? And so he's really responsible that we're at this point today. Now, he didn't build the system. The system has always been here. In fact, President Obama built that very system that he's enacting. He's just putting it in full gear. We were fighting it when Obama was president, right? And so he's just doing what he thinks he's doing and probably best for him, for his business. And we don't even know. But the fact that we're actually asking him as a person, as a human being, in a civil way. This is a civil discourse conversation right now. And she's doing that in sanctuary, you know, in a church. I mean, wow, that's so powerful. And that's why she spoke to Edith first, because Edith did that 9 months ago, right? And so the sanctuary, it is about families, about children, it's about stopping deportations, it's about this cruel system, it is about President Trump and previously the administrations that has incarcerated, detained us, and deported us. But it's also more than that. It's like, how are we going to get back to our civility? And that's what I hear her saying. And she's doing it all through the issue of her children as a mother, right? And so the power of women, the power of mothers, and that to remind us about that. And if we don't hear that, if we only look at kind of the surface level issues, that if we don't hear that, then we're missing it. That's what this fight is about. Sanctuary is about liberation for us as people.
So let me kind of grab onto that. You mentioned mothers and children, and that's been, you know, big lately. You know, a lot of mothers, first ladies, have spoken out about migrant children being separated, or migrant children being separated from their parents at the border.
Right.
And so how do, you know, the conversations we have about and with Miriam and Edith fit into this bigger push, you know, the rallies, the other activism against Trump's immigration policies? What's their role?
The role of the people, I'm not sure.
Of sanctuary people.
Yeah. The role of sanctuary, what it's showing that there's one person, in this case a mother, in either case a mother, that's willing to in a sense, put herself in a closed area to make her point to be with her children. So she's, in Spanish, we say sacrificio. She's making the total sacrifice of putting herself in a space so she's not at least separated, because once they're gone, once she's in Honduras, she would never come back, right? And once Edith was returned to Mexico, she would never come back. And we're pretty sure about that. If so, it would be in 30 or 40 years. And so I think that people are doing, saying the right things, but ultimately that risk of the ask, of the call, of or the cry of the people in the streets, it has to take some risk. And that's what these mothers, these women, these people in the sanctuary, these 45 people across the country are doing. And to me, that gives me hope, because I feel that I am not even taking that risk, right? And so I'm privileged. I've been around here for many years. I know people and I know how to work this system and for to make that happen. But it's humbling for me to think that, like, even I, or especially I, am not doing it either. And or I could do more. Maybe I am doing, but I can actually do more. And so how can you do that as a writer? How can you do that as a person, you know, a technician or whatever? I think that we can all do something. Something is calling us, and what's happening here, and what's the difference between this case and Edith is that it's a larger denomination. So it's a Lutheran ELCA. They're connected. They have many churches in the synod. And you saw a good representation of them today, maybe 20 or 30 people that are clergy that are leading. And so this movement is only going to grow. And that cry is being heard, and that cry from the mothers of Miriam, from Edith, and other people is going to be heard. But you have to take the risk. People are not willing to take that risk.
The biggest risk, kind of like you said, is that people can take is if they're in this situation, though. You know, if they're Miriam or Edith or another, you know, undocumented immigrant. You know, I went and interviewed Miriam in person on Friday, mm-hmm. and you were there. You were helping translate, and it was weird to see her living space. You know, and mm-hmm. I kind of wish to understand people could see that without invading her privacy. But you know, she's got her two daughters and her husband. They're living in one room. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just a rectangular room, like a very small apartment. Mm-hmm. You know, and just that even strikes you at her sacrifice. But it's within the walls of this church, which makes it much safer than her West Side apartment for her right now to stay with her children. So kind of brings me to the faith aspect of mm-hmm. sanctuary. And I'm going to talk to you in a minute about what motivates churches, in your opinion. But first, let's hear this clip from the Reverend Sally Padgett. She's pastor where Miriam is staying at First English Lutheran Church downtown.
People have always asked, or have recently have been asking, how did this congregation decide to do this so quickly? And for this congregation, I have to say it was an easy decision. The question was more, how can we not do this? In Matthew 25, after Jesus separates the nations, the sheep from the goats ask Jesus, when did we see you hungry or thirsty, a stranger or in need of clothing, and sick or in prison, and did not help? And Jesus replies, whatever you did not do for the least of these, you did it for me. Jesus tells us to welcome the stranger. So following our Lord's call, that is what we did as a congregation. All Christians are called to love them, their neighbors as themselves. So I ask you also, if you are a Christian, to love Miriam. Love her and love her children as you would yourself. Help her get the legal help she needs and help her to stay united with her family. Can you make a donation? Can you provide food? Can you just be supportive of this issue and help make sure she stays safe? That is what we are asking.
Right. So I'm going to kind of grab onto the least of these, because I hear that a ton in my work as a faith and immigration reporter. You know, a lot of what motivates churches is thinking of the least of these. And that's a popular kind of biblical phrase. So tell me, you know, this morning at the press conference, you said you'd worked with Sally a lot in these past like 2 weeks, yeah. and you didn't know her before this. Yeah. So tell me, from working with her, from working with Joel Miller, the pastor at Columbus Mennonite Church where Edith is, what have you found, you know, really motivates these people to let an immigrant live in their church?
I think it's a profound statement of faith, and it's the praxis. It's putting your prayer into action and doing it quickly because the discernment process is interesting, because if we think about it too hard, we will talk ourselves out of it. There's 101 reasons why they shouldn't do it. And there's one why they should. And so it's easier to focus on the 101 because the cost, because of this, but that. And so we found that in this, and it happened with Edith, is the sense of urgency heightens the possibility of it happening. If a church thinks too long, then it's not likely that they will actually house someone. You start looking at the logistics. And that's just the way we are, I think, as people, right? Decisions we make, even like going on vacation. We think too long. Oh, it's going to cost. We got to be with it. You won't do it, right? And so... so the timing is interesting, but I think that more than that, you know, separating the sheep and the goats, and you know, who are the sheep and the goats? Today, what was interesting and touched me that no one really noticed, we didn't tell this story, but while we were there, there was a man across the street on the north side of Main Street, an immigrant man working, doing construction work. And when he heard us speaking Spanish, he turned around and he came to us. And he stood there and watched us, and no one noticed that. I didn't. It was pointed out to me. I saw him there, and then he went back, and then we went back and talked to him. And so part of our faith is taking that log out of our eye, because we don't do that. It's inconvenient to do that, right? We don't see what's happening, you know, and it's easier just to enjoy the fruits of our place or the food, the tomato, and not think, how did this get here? And so that's not by accident. That's a concentrated effort for us not to think that. And so I think that people of faith, we're just people. And so we fall into that also. But when we are starkly reminded, when someone comes and you see the face and you have to make a decision, you think you do exactly what Miriam said, ask President Trump to do. We put our hand on our hearts and our consciousness, and we say, we just have to do it. And so the decision, their leadership team decided very quickly. They decided the next step was a Sunday service, and they decided very quickly, yes. I don't even know fully what they're getting into. And that's the other thing. We reward efficiency. This is not efficient. This is going to take a while, and we don't know the outcome yet. And so that's the risk, in a sense, the very risk that individually Mary and her children have taken. The church has done that collectively. And what we're asking people to do that, it's kind of like a concentric circle, the next circle to do it, the next circle to do it. And that is how we will be saved, as far as from my faith perspective. That's how we're going to do it.
So tell me a little bit about what goes into this. You know, we talk about Columbus Mennonite Church, and we talk about, you know, First English Lutheran Church, but I know there's so many more involved. So tell me a little bit about how you know, who was very involved in Edith's case, still is, very involved in Miriam's. How do you mobilize these people? What is the organizational process to, you know, is it cold calling a church and saying, can you house an immigrant? You know, what is that?
Yeah, so we've been doing this for a while. I've been here for quite a while, and you're constantly establishing relationships with people, because the people who come are the people that know you, that trust you, your friends. Basically, I tell people say, how do you do it? I said, all I do is make authentic friends, because when in need, you go to your friends and your friends respond, right? And so that's kind of our style. That's our organizing tactic. But also, we also know that there's policy. There's other things that we have to do as well. And we push things as well. But we have those connections. No one can do it by themselves. I think it does take someone in the middle between both communities, because there's a cultural difference aspect here. The allies are, and I'm not sure I like that term, but I can't think of a better one right now. But people in solidarity are the ones that really are the ones that are privileged, right? They have the privilege to come here at 9 o'clock in the morning or any time. And so just being able to organize that is what we do. When people do call, people do, I'm going to use that. I think I'll use that with Marion. People ultimately will, good people will put their hands on their hearts, on their consciousness and respond. And that's what gives me strength. I was up at three or four in the morning this morning, and that's how we carry on. And because that's the hope, that we shall survive, that we shall overcome, that freedom will come, that our liberation will come. But that comes in the context of the anti-group, the people, a lot of things that are happening against us, including this administration, the system, the ICE system. But we continue. We believe that change can happen, but it's only going to happen when people risk, and when those affected risk and are heard, and we provide the space for them to be heard or to be housed or to provide a safe space for them. And that ultimately, that is what sanctuary is, I believe.
So So do you believe there will be more people like Miriam and Edith? Are there more people who need help and need to be housed?
Definitely. We have already, my phone rings all the time, and there's another person that has been looking, and it's nothing that I talk them into. And so I think that the sanctuary movement is only going to grow. It certainly has been doing that in Columbus and in Ohio. It's not for everyone. It's not the answer. It is a way to help a family to put a face on the story and to make a difference. And it can make a difference systematically. But I do believe that it's going to be growing. The need is there, because there is not, the only thing that's happening right now with immigrant justice is there's nothing legislatively that has any chance or any hope. But the only thing that is happening is detention, incarceration, deportation. That's what's happening. And at some point, that's going to break. Something's going to happen. Sanctuary offers at least a ray of hope for a family where someone, and it opens a space for a greater movement, I believe.
Thank you so much, Ruben, for coming. If you want to help, you can go to Columbus Sanctuary Collective's Facebook.
Right.
And donate or get more information?
Right. There's a link just right on the top of the page on how to donate. Of course, it takes financial resources, and it's going to take resources of there's food, there's things that they're going to need as times go. But what we commit to is to support that family, not only provide them living space, but also to support them in a financial way that makes sense. And because there's children involved here, then we want to support their children as well. There's special things in need. And then there's medical, and there's mental health, and in times we're going to have to take them to school, assuming they're still there when the school starts. So there's going to be the need for us to step up, and we're starting to organize that. The other is you could send an email to the Columbus Sanctuary Collective at Gmail, Columbus Sanctuary Collective at Gmail, and just write down that you'd like to help, and we can get back to you as well. But the Facebook page is probably the fastest way to do that, and it'll give you a current idea of what's happening in terms of both cases and kind of the movement of immigrant justice.
Thanks again, Ruben.
Gracias, thank you.